city, I've been browsing. Treading water that they drowning. My head on a swivel, yeah. It's only real in my surroundings.
Hello and welcome to episode 222 of the Smash Accept podcast. I'm your host, Michael Royer. You can find me on Twitter at DynastyDadFF. Today, we're going to talk about 22 running backs in episode 222, worth a 24-2. You know, nobody better to talk about running backs than the running back guru himself. You know, we were talking a little bit before this, and it's like when people want to talk about quarterbacks in the class, they talk to me. When they want to talk running backs, they talk to this guy. Snoog, how you doing today, brother?
Feeling good, Dad. I had to bring out the Guido shirt to talk running backs with you. This is a big show, so I'm excited. I mean, we love doing this. Last year, we crushed the running back values, and this year, weaker class, but there's still going to be values, right? Draft capital is going to lift these guys up boards. We're going to kind of help you out who you need to draft and who you need to avoid.
I love it. Breaking out the inner Guido. Speaking of which, when it comes to the 2024 class, hey, how you doing with these guys, huh?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Blake Corum is the guy that everyone's so scared of just because of the age, but I think everybody has to take into account the 2025 running back class is going to come in like a bulldozer and probably end the pro careers of a lot of these players that we're hyping up right now, just in terms of fantasy value. Yeah. Right? Like, we got a lot of good role players plus upside in this class, but there's no Quinshon Judkins. There's no Ollie Gordon. There's no Ashton Jonte from Boise State. Like, we got to take the values. I don't care if Blake Corum's 23 years old. He's pro ready. He's going to play day one. If he gives me an RB1 season in his rookie year, I made out with that second round rookie pick.
Yeah, I was looking at Corum earlier today. Like, since 2018, there's only been four running backs to go over 50 career touchdowns, which he had 58, 50 career receptions, and 4,000 all-purpose yards. It was Etienne, Breece Hall, Royce Freeman, and Blake Corum. I mean, Blake Corum is, in my mind, and I've come around with you. You know, you've kind of been steering that ship as the RB1 of this class because he's the most all around. He's the most balanced. He's the safest pick. You know, like I love Jonathan Brooks throughout the entire process, and we're going to talk about him later, you know, but he's bouncing back off injury. And Jalen Wright had a phenomenal pro day or combine, I should say, and has a ton of upside. But I think just the safest pick is Blake Corum. To your point earlier, and I don't want to get past this before we dig more into Corum, is I've been talking to a lot of people and talking about where the windows are for quarterbacks, where the windows are for wide receivers, where the windows are for running backs. And in a super flex draft right now, I mean, you look at the second round, and this is why we keep talking about seconds. You know, as of right now, before we get landing spots, you could have 6-7 running backs go in that second round. But one quarterback leagues, and this is what I keep telling everybody. Everybody's like, hey, what do I do with 106, 107, 108? And this is a class where it's like most years you're like, oh, sweet. I get the wide receiver two of the class at 107 because there's so many running backs. Next year, your one quarterback rookie picks are worth so much more than they are this year. This year, you know, you have your three elite wide receivers. You have Brock Bowers. And then at 105, you're debating between taking a quarterback already or Brian Thomas or Xavier Worthy or hoping one of these running backs lands in Dallas or, you know, with the Chargers. But if you have a mid-first right now, it's time to sell that mid-first for a 25 first plus. Because if you can deal the 107, which might be Blake Corum, you know, for a 25 first plus a James Conner, now you get James Conner as a rental for this year, and then you get a running back better than Blake Corum next year. And I had to get out there because I had so many of you guys reaching out, be like, what do I do in my one quarterback rookie drafts? It's just that simple. Trade into 25 for a random one, get a Aaron Jones, get a James Conner, get a Joe Mixon, and get yourself set for next year.
I love that play. I think James Conner, I love that you brought that guy up. He's a guy that was great last year. I was running through his numbers and kind of diving through his tape. He looks like he unlocked the inner old version of James Conner in himself, just with his explosiveness and how he was running behind an Arizona Cardinals team that sucked. Like, they weren't a good team. Yeah. Kyler Murray, they were relying on Joshua Dobbs to make big plays for a while there in Arizona. And it's like Kyler Murray's finally back. He's fully healthy. They have pick four. I hope they bring in Marvin Harrison Jr., but there's a chance, like I said to you earlier on the phone, they move back and they hunt Rome Odunze down in the mid 8 to 7 to 10 range. And they move back into that top 10 after moving back maybe with the Vikings. So I think the Cardinals offense is going to be phenomenal. James Conner is a great value. Kamara, Austin Eckler, these are other guys that you can get. Tear off that 108, 109. Go get a 25 first and get one of these veteran running backs thrown in.
If you look at what James Conner's notoriously been better with Kyler on the field, but yep. If you look at what he did, he was an RB1 over the last 5 weeks, and he's one of those guys that I think is worth a late second, and it has been for years. That 210 to 212 is a smash. But, you know, you look at Kyler came back in week 10. Kyler took a couple weeks to kind of get things going. Those 3 weeks, James Conner wasn't popping off. Once Kyler took off in week 13, all the way to week 18, those final 5 weeks where Kyler was an RB or a QB1 every week, you look at what James Conner was. He was RB5, RB11, RB4, RB4, and RB1. So, I mean, you're right. He absolutely smashed over that time. And I think James Conner, like I said, and I know we wanted to talk vets at the end, but this is that year where if you really need a running back, you start tearing out, even in Superflex. You move yourself out of 1-9, 1-10, 1-11, and you get James Conner plus a first next year, and you put yourself into that area. Our guy, PPR Tips, shout out to him. He put James Conner as always a great pick. He put a thread out on him. For sure, that's a guy that you want to go out there and get. So let's get back into the 24 running backs. And I love that we can now interact with you guys on Twitter and YouTube, and you guys are asking questions all the time. And I encourage you guys to do that. I encourage you guys to do that in the Patreon. Sign up and get all your questions asked. So many of you guys are saying, what's James Conner worth? And the biggest thing that I'm providing in the Patreon is, you know what? He's worth this 209 to 212 range. These are the players in that area. Your biggest value is you're bringing, you know, insight onto these running back class. So it's just a perfect blending for you guys to get the best possible scenario for your fantasy teams to get lined up for this year. So back to Blake Corum. He is both of our RB1. Let's say he goes to the Chargers or Dallas. And this is the biggest question that I'm getting from everybody. I posted the other day, Cody Carpenter did a mock draft where Jalen Wright went to the Cowboys. I said he's instantly the 109. I'm not even debating it anymore. Blake Corum goes to either the Cowboys or the Chargers. He becomes a first-round pick. Am I right?
Yeah, I'm still a big believer in this wide receiver class. I think it would have to be a late first for me to consider any of these running backs personally. That's just kind of where I'm at this running back class. Like I said, mm-hmm. If we look at this class as a whole, this is why I have Blake Corum as RB1. He's the most pro-ready. He's the most fundamentally sound between the tackles, the footwork, the vision, the short area quickness. He's the type of athlete that matters for the running back position. And running backs are my bread and butter. I love diving deep into their tape, running numbers on these running backs every year. This is a different class. We can't look at this like a traditional running back class, right? Like, there's no Jahmyr Gibbs, Bijan Robinson. There's no Devon Achane with this guy that has this crazy explosiveness and short area abilities like Achane had. And there's not a lot of elite receiving backs. So you kind of have to look at this class in a nutshell and be like, okay, who's the most pro ready? Who's going to be that day two pick? Who has the most upside? This is why I'm chasing the elite athletes, right? The Jalen Wrights, the Marshawn Lloyds, the Trey Bensons. They're elite athletes. They have that high ceiling if they get the workload and if they get that day two draft capital, even round four. So, I mean, I'm sure there's going to be tons of people taking them 109, 110 because the Cowboys are in desperate need of taking a running back. The Chargers are in desperate need of taking a running back, like a 1-2 punch with Gus. You got teams like the Cardinals that could look to add. You get teams like all those teams, mm-hmm. like Aaron Jones and the Vikings. Like, a lot of these good, better teams that are building something aren't going to go into the season with just a 29-year-old running back bet in that room, right? Like, you could see a scenario where the Browns bring someone in, because I've seen that there has been buzz around Nick Chubb potentially getting cut if he doesn't want to restructure his contract. There's like every year we go into the draft thinking we know where they're going to go. Like, I thought Kendre Miller was going to be a Saint. He was the fourth running back drafted off the board. I couldn't have been more happy about that. He hit, the NFL loved him, and he went to the Saints to play with my favorite player, Kamara. It's like, landing spots are everything for these running backs, and you have to just chalk that first year for him, right? 20 years old, was a very good prospect, carried that TCU team. It didn't matter because fantasy football at the running back position is clear path to opportunity. Can you catch the ball? Can you work your way into that third down role? And can you maintain a workhorse role if you can't?
Yeah, and that's a lot of the reason why I'm buying in on the vets cheaper this year than I would in years past. Because everybody's like, Dad, you don't talk about buying running backs this time of year. You're always talking about investing in youth. And at this year, I'm like, dude, The 2017 class was so good. The 2018 class has some guys where, you know what, those running backs are aging out, but at the same time, this is the time to buy them because this class isn't that great. You look at the years past. I mean, obviously 2023 had Bijan and Gibbs, and 2022 was Breece Hall, 2021 Najee Harris, 2020 Jonathan Taylor, even though Clyde Edwards-Helaire was the first guy taken, 2019 Jacobs, 2018 Fournette, 2017 McCaffrey. I mean, it goes on and on. These guys were elite right off the bat. We don't have that. I look at more of this as like the 2014 class where we're just sitting there and like, okay, I'm at this spot. I'm going to move Bishop Sankey all the way up to the top. I'm going to start moving these guys that don't belong there. And that's kind of where I'm at, because a lot of people are comparing it to the 2019 class because the 2019 class had Montgomery and Jacobs, and then it fell off hard, but people were starting to push landing spot. Someone today messaged me when I was, I made a tweet about Bishop Sankey, which is, you know, before you were just in diapers then. But in 2014, people were like pushing him up over OBJ, up over Mike Evans. You're like, this is the RB1 of the class. That doesn't always mean something. I mean, there are at least six wide receivers who are better than the RB1 of this class. And that's where you got to really take that into consideration, where Clyde Edwards-Helaire was my RB6 in 2020. All right. And this is when I first started podcasting, and it was like, okay, he's the RB6 in this class. Jonathan Taylor's my RB1. There's no debate. All of a sudden he goes to the Chiefs, and now people are taking him over Joe Burrow. They're taking him over Jonathan Taylor. And it's like, this year, the class is not elite in those running backs. I'm not going to move them up super high, but there is a debate from 1-9 to 1-12 for me, you know, where you're in that worthy, that Brian Thomas Jr., if one of these guys goes to the Chargers, goes to the Cowboys, it's definitely worth considering.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it comes down to, right? Like, round two draft capital speaks, especially if the player is pretty good, right? Like a guy like Corum, a guy like Benson, Brooks, Wright, Lloyd, even like Estime, if they squeeze into that day two range in a good landing spot where they're going to get the clear path to opportunity, they're going to get some goal line work, maybe some volume in the receiving game, they're going to put up fantasy point numbers. We saw 2022's class. There's no Breece Hall in this class. There's no Kenneth Walker in this class, but there's a James Cook. There's a Rashad White. There's a Zamir White. There's a Pacheco. There's all these guys that got the good landing spots with opportunity to get workloads. Kyren Williams that didn't test well at all. Now he was a good prospect, and now he's looking great on the Rams. So it comes down to the opportunity and the draft capital. And I speak on that truly, because we saw last year, we saw Tank Bigsby, a guy that a lot of people loved, get buried behind Travis Etienne. Zach Charbonnet, who was like almost everybody's RB3, a lot of people's RB2 over Jahmyr Gibbs, buried behind Kenneth Walker. We saw Roshan buried in a committee. Like, we need to see these running backs go to Dallas. We need to see them go to the Giants. Like, I want to see Devin Singletary as the guy that Blake Corum has to beat out, not Jonathan Taylor or not Kenneth Walker. So that's what matters, is the path to volume.
Yeah, that's why guys like Zach Charbonnet, you and I were so high on him, and then all of a sudden he goes with Kenneth Walker. So, I mean, it's a tricky situation. We're going to have to get into that. We're going to have to dive more into it. But I want to talk about these running backs. A lot of people's RB1 in the class is Trey Benson. I mean, Trey Benson came out and absolutely dominated the combine, the 4.39. He's someone that I've been high on in the process. Tell me a little bit about what Trey Benson does well. Tell me why, you know, so many people have him as their RB1.
Yeah, he reminds me of what we wanted Sean Tucker to be, right? That explosive home run hitting running back. I mean, he's 6'1", 6', 216, explosive, 4.39 speed, workhorse size. He has great hands out of the backfield. He's right, as of today, after doing some more numbers, watching some more film last night, he's my RB2 behind Blake Corum.
Same.
I think he's just like, he's pro ready. He's a raw player between the tackles. I think there's times he flashes that great tackle breaking, that contact balance. And then there's times the vision lacks a little bit, but that's fine, right? Because this is the league today. Like, this is a guy that you're going to get in a power run scheme, get him on the outside. He's going to be that home run hitter, like that Kenneth Walker mold. He's my RB2. He'd probably be my RB1 if there wasn't a Blake Corum in this class, but I just think he's so pro ready. But he's just elite athlete. He has hands, so he can check that receiving box upside. He's still 21, 22 years old. He had great production at Florida State, even though it was a little bit of a committee. He was still very explosive, very efficient runner, great in missed tackles, forced per attempt. And I looked at some of like the Dominator rating, yards after contact per attempt, all that good stuff. And he checked pretty good every box in all those metrics analytically as well. So I love the tape. He's just that home run hitter, right? And he's a guy that doesn't have a torn ACL like Brooks. He's not going to miss that year one. So that's why you got to value that elite athleticism. The NFL seems to love him. He's getting mocked in that round too. And I was a big fan of his play.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. I mean, he has good patience and good vision, but elite, great speed, great athleticism, a guy that's going to make things happen in the open field. And I'm glad you mentioned round two. And what a lot of people are going to say, and what I've been saying is, as long as you get, I'm looking at these guys like Corum, Benson, Brooks, Wright, and Lloyd. You and I both agree that those are the top five. If these guys get second round or third round draft capital, it changes things a lot. It puts them into that area where I keep saying all of these guys are worth second round picks as long as they get third round draft capital. Talk to me a little bit. You know, I was talking with Austin Abbott, another awesome guy to make sure you guys follow. And he was like, what are the things that separate for you? We talked about checking those boxes. We want them to be able to be a receiver. We want them to be able to at least be in that 4-5 or better speed range. We look at all these different things. And then the last one is draft capital. And for me, it's like, once you get inside round three, the team's making a commitment to, yes, you can have guys like Kyren Williams who are, you know, undrafted, and you can have guys that go in the fourth round who end up being worth something. But for me, I'm looking for those running backs to go round two, round three that I really want to invest in.
Exactly. Draft capital landing spot is very, very big for this running back class, because it's not like 2023, like I said, right? It's not a class that we can go into it, analyze these guys talent wise and pick out who's the best ones. Like, you could argue there's 5 to 6 guys in tier one, and you could probably make a good argument for any of those guys to be your RB1 in this class. I think this is like the first year in a while we haven't had a consensus RB1. And I think that's the good part about it, right? Because a lot of people think they have it figured out just for Jalen Wright to go round two to the Cowboys and Jonathan Brooks go round four. And then everyone's taking Jalen Wright over Brooks, right? So everybody just needs to understand that there's a tier, and that I'm probably going to fall in love with whoever becomes the best value out of that tier. If there's a guy that goes, if say five of them go day three, right? Or day two, round two, round three, I'll probably pick out that guy that's the most talented, but the most undervalued of the group. And that's going to be my guy that I'm going to smash draft. Cause if there's a guy that gets the draft capital, gets the landing spot, I don't care if you're mid, I don't care if you're bad. If you get starting running back opportunities, we've seen Ty Chandler put up numbers, right? So it's all about that opportunity. And if you can get the workload to put up fantasy points.
I already brought it up with the one quarterback. Now I'm going to talk about what I'm trying to do in the late first in a super flex. Right now, what I'm doing is if I have 1-9 through 1-12, I am moving into the second round and then getting a 25 first. You know, I'm trying to go into that late 25 or late 24 second, mid 24 second, and get one of these running backs, get myself to get an opportunity plus these guys, because we know what 25 is going to look like. We also love some of these guys' opportunities. For me, a guy that if he goes round three, he is my RB1 in the class before, you know, we really started to dig deep into thing, and that's Jonathan Brooks. I mean, he was stuck behind Bijan and Roshan early at Texas. But in 2023, he broke out. I mean, he rushed for 1,139 yards, 10 touchdowns in just 11 games before his injury on just 238 college carries. He possessed what I believe to be a three-down skill set. Absolute explosive runner, but good enough in the pass game. He was my RB1, and I think you and I were kind of talking a little bit backstage of, you're getting some Kendre Miller-type vibes. There's a scenario here where, you know, if he goes to, like, you loved Kendre, but then he went to New Orleans and didn't really break out because of that. So he could be an absolute buy in that Kendre Miller type mold where he goes behind someone. I saw a mock the other day that had him going to the Ravens behind Derrick Henry. Imagine that, where you have Derrick Henry fresh for the beginning of the game. And now towards the end of the season, Brooks really starts to find his rhythm and you got an absolute beast for 2025.
I love that you brought this up, and I love that you mentioned Kendre Miller, because that a lot of people are comping them as similar prospects. I think Kendre was more explosive, a better raw athlete, but I think Brooks is sound between the tackles. He's good at making people miss, very smooth runner, doesn't really waste any movements at all. Still just 20 years old like Kendre was. They both had knee injuries. They're both missing quality time, no pro day, no combine. I think the issue is people aren't prepared to have Brooks go to a team where he's sitting behind a Derrick Henry or a James Conner.
Well, we're not,
drafting Jonathan. You're not going to take Jonathan Brooks in round two or round three if he's going to be your starter, because you don't know if he's going to play. He's coming off a torn ACL. Like, they're the team that is going to take Jonathan Brooks, especially in a class like this where there's so many similar talent in like the top 5 to 6 running backs, they're going to take a Blake Corum before they take a Jonathan Brooks, because he can play now. They need that running back now. Like, the Cowboys need someone. They can't draft Brooks and have Rico Dowdle be the running back for 8 games, right?
He feels like the perfect guy. Yeah, like behind Derrick Henry, behind Aaron Jones, behind Joe Mixon. We talked about those 2017 running backs. You start putting him behind those guys, now all of a sudden his value might be depressed for the guys that are trying to get immediate production. That's why we're offering veterans to get immediate production. But I think upside in this class, I think it's Corum and I think it's Benson that have the two most upside. I think and he's in that same area. Brooks, I think, has the upside to be a potential workhorse back, where a lot of these other guys we're talking about, you know what? A Will Shipley, a Braylon Allen, they're going to have a role, right? They get in the right area where they're a backup and they get an opportunity. A Bucky Irvin and Audric Estime, they're going to get some opportunities. But I think Brooks, Benson, and Corum have some upside to be a little bit more longevity in the league, even Jalen Wright.
Yeah, exactly. You nailed it. And that's why I prefer Benson Brooks or Benson Corum over a guy like Brooks, is just because I think Dallas or I think the Giants, like one of these teams that need a running back now, they're going to go for Benson or they're going to go for Benson or Corum over Brooks. They're not going to take Brooks and say, we hope he's ready for training camp. We hope he can start the season. That's what the Saints did with Kendre, right? They paired him up with Kamara, Jamal Williams. I don't think the Saints thought they were going to get Kendre, and they just realized he fell and they were like, yeah, we're taking this guy. He's talented. He carried that TCU team to the national championship, and we're going to draft him because he's 20 years old. We have an old running back room. He'll get his time eventually. I think Brooks is going to be in a very similar situation, and then I'll buy him, right? Like, Kendre Miller was getting squeezed into that late first last year in a stack class. I'm seeing Jonathan Brooks squeezed into the late first in a stack class this year. It's going to be the same thing, and if I'm you, I'm waiting. Then I'm buying Brooks midseason when people are like, get this guy off my team. Give me a 25-second. That's your opening window to buy Brooks. And you're really good at that, Dad. I've noticed that throughout the process and draft cycle that I've been with you, and I've been part of Smash Accept, that I've noticed that you capitalize on that, right? When there's a guy falling that's a talented prospect, you give up your draft capital for the following year, and you get them at a massive discount, and then they can break out. I saw you do it with Jordan Love. He was a first-round pick. People completely forgot about him. Aaron Rodgers was rumored to leave. He left. Your Jordan Love shares are cashing out. Tell us a little bit how you do that and why you do that on a guy like Jonathan Brooks, Kendre Miller, et cetera.
Yeah. Well, I think the biggest thing is just being patient. Like, so many people want immediate. They want what's right in front of their face. They want that shiny new toy, which is where last year I was trading into the late first between 1-8 and 1-12. I was giving up that pick to get Jordan Love last year. Now he's worth double, almost triple that. You know, now we're in an area where you get to the 206 and someone's going to be like, oh man, I love this guy here. Now you go, you buy Kendre Miller, and now you have a spot where, you know, if Kamara goes down, Kendre Miller has, I know this might sound crazy, but back end RB1 upside, you know, and you go into those areas where people are out of sight, out of mind, and everyone wants the shiny new toy. In the second round, we're going to be able to buy some of these veterans, you know, and this is the list of guys that I came out with yesterday, where this is where their value is now. What I really strongly encourage you guys to do is just kick the tires on these on draft day, because these veterans right now might have a value that is different in a month from now. I mean, look, I said Isaiah Pacheco right now is worth the 201 to me, but you might get in a super flex draft next month where the guy at 203 really wants to get Jonathan Brooks. He really wants to get, you know, Blake Corum, whoever he wants, and says, you know what? I'll trade you Isaiah Pacheco for the 203. Isaiah Pacheco has been a back-end RB1. He's been phenomenal, and he's definitely worth that 201. You know, and I think this is where we start to get into that debate where you start to talk about what next year's class is, what you're trying to invest in. And for me, if I got that 201, do I want to invest in a running back who might not be very well involved this year? You know, we talk a lot about, I know it was further back, but Zach Stacy didn't have the high draft capital for the Rams, played very well, and all of a sudden the Rams had an opportunity to get Todd Gurley. sorry, Stacey, you're gone. You know what I mean? Like that, that's kind of what I see a lot of these guys in the 2024 class, where a guy like Isaiah Pacheco is going to give you immediate production for 2024 and possibly further on into that. Let's just keep going down through those guys. And I want you to just chime in on what your thoughts are there. For me, 202, I would buy Najee Harris for the 202 right now. I think Najee Harris is a guy that you and I have liked over the years, but I think Arthur Smith now is in there. We look at Russell Wilson, who loves to check down. And I think Najee Harris could have 50 plus receptions and be a mid RB2 at that 202 price and still young enough to move on into his second deal.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that's had 1,000 yards in three of his first three seasons. He's very underrated just to the community. Everyone just thinks he's horrible at football for some reason. He's not the world's most talented player ever. He's a good football player, and I think he's learned to use his size and his physicality more, that he's that 6'1", 230-pound back versus that trying to be elusive too much. So I think Russell Wilson, he's going to check the ball down a lot. We saw that in Seattle. Now he's got Arthur Smith. They're going to run the ball. He's probably going to see 20 touches a game. Just cheap RB1 volume, and you can get him for a second-round pick. It's a no-brainer. Still 25 years old. I'm all for it. And I don't think he's ever missed a game. Like, I think he is as healthy as they come.
And last year he was banged up
on him, but he hasn't missed a game. So
absolutely. And then the 203, I said, you know, and he is David Montgomery. I know he's always the guy that everybody is just like, all right, I don't want David Montgomery, but he's a lock for 10 touchdowns. He's a lock for 800 yards. And Ramondre Stevenson. And I know he's dipped down a little bit because of the Antonio Gibson signing. Do you like either of these guys in this area? And I want to really, after that, talk about why I have these three guys in a tier compared to what we're talking about with rookies.
I honestly really don't. I think I'd rather the rookie running backs when you get to that point. Like, I think you got Blake Corum, Trey Benson, and then once you get to three, I think you could argue Wright, Lloyd, Brooks for three. Mm-hmm. I love that Wright's only 20 years old, has elite athleticism. He 4.39 40, elite broad jump, vertical was great. He's just an elite athlete. I think that he's like one of those guys that I want to invest in. He's that project player that can boom. And I could see him, like, the NFL seems to like a guy like that a lot. So I'd prefer to go after one of those type of guys, or go after like an Audric Estime, even when you get down to that type of tier, because you're just getting a reset 4-year rookie deal. If they get opportunity, they're young. If they boom, then the value goes through the roof.
I'm glad you said Jalen Wright, because he's someone that, when you're looking at things, I mean, logged a run of at least 10 yards on 25% of his carries in 2023. Yeah. Absolute prolific big play opportunity. A lot of people are trying to compare him to Alvin Kamara, which I don't quite see. He has pass catching ability, but not the same kind of thing. So let's not try to cheat that. But I do have him in my top five, and this is why I broke it down like this. What I did in my rankings this week is I put my potential starting running backs, and there's five guys in this class for tier one. And I said all of these guys are worth an early second in super flex startups. And that's, you know, Corum, Benson, Brooks, Wright. And, you know, you could argue Lloyd. And those guys, what I'm saying, are the equivalent of those running backs that I just listed. So depending on what your team looks like, you have those kind of opportunities where, you know, if you have the 201 and you want to go get a guy like Pacheco because you're win now, go for it. You know, but if you're not win now, you kind of work yourself into this scenario. The next tier I have, and I have these guys listed, in my opinion, for guys that I would say, you know, they have an opportunity in the NFL to be an RB 1A, 1B type scenario. And I had Lloyd, Braylon Allen, Will Shipley in that area. You could argue Audric Estime. You could argue Bucky Irving. I have them a tier below. But I think these are guys that, you know, they have 1A, 1B potential. They're a guy where, you know, I would not be upset if Marshawn Lloyd went to the Giants, where him and Devin Singletary had a 1A, 1B. Braylon Allen, you know, some complimentary type pieces. So let's talk about these guys. I mean, I want to hear what you have to say about Marshawn Lloyd, because he's the one I'm most bullish out of this group. I know you have him in tier one. I have him in tier two. Tell me why you have him a little bit higher.
I think in terms of breaking tackles and making people miss, he's the best running back in this class, just from an elusive standpoint. Turning nothing into something is his middle name. And I think Marshawn Lloyd was a great recruit. He had some injuries at South Carolina. He transferred. He got the opportunity there at USC. Caleb Williams is not a guy that's going to check the football down. Marshawn Lloyd has some pretty good receiving chops, but we didn't get to see it as much as we'd like, because Caleb Williams is the type of guy that is going to make the play downfield. He's not going to settle for the check down, especially in college football. football. This is a guy that 4.46 40 at 220 pounds. He was a great athlete. He's a good short area athlete. I think you can make a very good argument to have him as the RB3 in this class or higher. I haven't settled on an RB3 yet. I think I'm pretty set in stone on Corum and Benson as of today without draft capital and landing spots. But I think once you get to 3, 4, 5, I think Wright, Brooks, and Marshawn Lloyd are the 3, 4, 5 in this class for me right now. And I think that any of those guys could be the RB1 of this class. And I like that Lloyd is 22 years old, checks the box on the Senior Bowl, had a great, great day there, great weekend, had a great combine. He was strong. He put up great numbers. He jumped fast. He jumped high. He ran really good. He had good splits. Like, this is a guy that, in my opinion, can be that Isaiah Pacheco. And I think that's my comp for him, is a more elusive Isaiah Pacheco, because he runs like he's going to put his feet through the turf and be like six feet underground. He just runs with anger. And I love that type of running back, because they're going to be the guys that win over the roles, because they're that high motor players. And I think Lloyd's a good fit in today's NFL offensive schemes.
Yeah, that bull in a china shop, except Isaiah Pacheco runs right into the everything. Marshawn Lloyd's got a little bit more juice, a little bit more wiggle there. I love that you hit it there. It's 4.46 40. Guy with big play potential, both in the run and pass game. He's decent in there. The part that I really like is, and I know he's missed time, but he's never had more than 120 carries in a season, which means there's plenty of tread left on the tire. We haven't seen the best of Marshawn Lloyd in my experience. So you're like, some guys, you see him in college and you're like, okay, this guy, this is what he has in the pros. I anticipate this way. I think he'll be a better pro than he was in college. Hopefully we get to see some of that. Braylon Allen, who, when we had Matt Hicks on, said that that's his RB1 of the class. And I think testimony to the class not being super strong, where there's five or six guys that people argue back and forth of who should be the RB1. Allen is someone that I think, if we get him in the right scenario, you know, like, he is a poor man's Derrick Henry. We get him into an area where we get him in Dallas. We get him somewhere there. He could, you know, surpass some of these guys. What do you like about Allen's game?
I love that he's 20 years old. He broke out at 17 years old. He carried the main workload for that Wisconsin offense that loves to run the ball. I was a big Debbie Darling with Braylon Allen in his first two seasons. I almost think that it's the team scheme and offense switching up in 2023 in his junior season that kind of affected his game and made him confused out there almost. It looked like there was times where he got the ball and he's like, what do I do? And then there's times he's running with anger and he's running guys over. Like, we need to see more of that, Braylon Allen, because you're a freight train. You're physically gifted, 6'1", 6'2", 240 pounds. It's you're crazy. Probably not the fastest guy out there, but you're a decent athlete. I want to see more of that. And I think just being 20 years old, that you can give us more of that. The right coaching staff can get you in, get you running, using your size better. He could be a Gus Edwards plus, where he gets 10 touchdowns and 1,000 yards, right? And he's a good comp for Braylon Allen is Jordan Howard, what Jordan Howard was there in Chicago.
Ooh, from Chicago,
1,200-yard season, double-digit touchdowns. We could see that from a guy like Braylon Allen with day two draft capital, even round four. The receiving upside's not there, but the two down grinder role is. And he, if he can learn how to use that size more, he'll be very, very successful in the NFL in that type of role, right? Like, he'll give you a couple good fantasy seasons, but he'll probably be really good for an NFL team in general. But speaking of other big body running backs, I want to dive into Audric Estime, because he's a guy that I'm a fan of his game. And I kind of want to see where you're at on him, why you're a little bit lower, because I have him as my RB6 right now. Right outside of year one. I want to hear kind of like what you thought about him. And so, I know the 40 wasn't pretty, but.
Not pretty. We were in the 4.7s there. But I mean, I think what we look at, I loved what I saw from him in college. You know, he's a big bruising type running back. Someone that I think, you know, is going to be, goes to the right situation, I think is going to have a lot of upside. 5'11", 221 pounds. Just guy that can wear down the defense with his power. 29 rushing touchdowns in 2 years, you know, so that part's great. I think it's just going to be landing spot for me. Like, this is the type of running back, and I know you and I have talked about it a lot, but you start to look at, you know, I put together all the insurance running backs. People don't like the word handcuff anymore, so I went with insurance running backs. But all the situations outside the top 10, there are potential openings. You know, you look at Baltimore is going to be looking. These are the guys that I think are like, if you get him as a 1A, 1B, Denver, their backup right now is Jaleel McLaughlin. So there's opening there. You know, Houston, you got Dameon Pierce. You move all the way down to, and this is the situations that I love. And I would love him in some of these areas right now where, in, you know, I know I wouldn't love it for Saquon Barkley, but right now Kenneth Gainwell's the backup for the Eagles. A guy like Esime to get into some of those goal line situations. You have Abanaconda's the backup for the Jets right now. Isaiah Spiller with the Chargers. Tank Bigsby, who we hate. Ty Johnson in Buffalo. You know, like some of these kind of areas where we get the right player. Could you think Tampa Bay as a complement to Rashad White, where now all they have to beat out is Chase Edmonds? The place that I'm loving some of these running backs to go is right now KC under contract has no backup. It's Keontae Ingram is the only other one. Indianapolis, Trey Sermon. The Rams, Ronnie Rivers is the only backup. Some of these kind of guys, and I have him more in that area where if he falls to the right spot, I think he has some upside, but I'm not going to invest too much more than like the 209 to 212.
Yeah, and he's a guy that he's 21 years old. He's a young guy. He was a four-star recruit. He had a breakout age at 19 years old, 800-plus yards as a sophomore. Once Kyren left, he took over. He was that bully running back. A couple things that I loved in his game was his yards after contact per attempt, four plus. That's very, very good. He was one of the best in the class at that. And you think, like, he was a guy that was top four in both vertical and broad jump in this class amongst running backs. So he has that short area explosiveness and that leg power. He's a bowling ball. Like, he's literally what people want Braylon Allen to be, and he's just as young, and he has better receiving abilities, and I think he's a better athlete as well. He 4.58 40 at the pro day. I think he just sucked at the 40, to be honest, and that's why we got a 4.7. Coming out of your stance, like, a lot of the running backs and stuff come straight up first. If you watch him, he literally goes from down to straight up, and he has these wicked short and choppy strides. He looks like he's like Mr. Krabs running out there, like the little memes when it's like,
yeah,
that's literally what he looks like. And on the football field, he doesn't look like that. So I was kind of disappointed by his combine in that aspect, but again, he jumped really well. He's that type of short area explosiveness. He's not a guy that's going to hit 90-plus yard touchdowns consistently on you. Mm-hmm. But like I said to you before, vaccines, like, he's that James Conner. He's that Chris Carson. That what we wanted Roschon Johnson to be is what Audric Estime is going to be. And he's the early declare, early breakout age version. Better receiver. Like, he's that better version of Roschon Johnson. I think a team's going to fall in love with him in round three or four, and he's going to have that goal line role. He's going to be that two down grinder, that Jamal Williams type guy. You could see a couple good seasons out of Audric Estime. So keep him on your radar. And I also was charting just running backs in this class based on breakaway run rate and explosive rush rate. He was damn near top two and three in both of those categories. And he's a guy that's 225 pounds. So a little spiel on Audric Estime, but he's a guy that I like, and I could see him jumping into tier one.
I love that. I love that. And like right now I have him right in between that 1A, 1B type guy or a committee back. The guy that I moved above him after the combine, and I want to get your take on it. I want to get your information and see what you think of Will Shipley. Because Will Shipley is someone that I wasn't big on during the process, but you look at him, I mean, his pass catching ability, he has great vision, sharp cuts, someone that I think is going to make some in the right spot. You know, I saw have a lot of pass catching ability. If he goes to a, you know, coordinator that's willing to use him, I saw some people putting Christian McCaffrey light. I was like, that's just really stretching it, you know. But I think he's going to be a guy that's made for today's NFL that I moved up a little bit early. And I'm probably a little bit too bullish on him. I wasn't quite as big on Estime, and that's why at this point in the year, I want to get your opinion.
Yeah, Shipley was a guy that I had top five in this class just before the process started, right? Like during the season, last year. He was a guy that a lot of people liked. He had 1,000 yards at Clemson. He was that good receiving back, good contact balance, explosive player. I think he's going to be a guy that finds himself into like a scat back type role with maybe upside. He's in my top 10. For sure. I think I have him around 8 or 9 right now.
Okay.
If he gets the draft capital, I find myself liking him again and bumping him up. Like, I think he can play. I think I'm more worried about, is he going to get draft capital? Is he going to be a guy that gets lost in the sauce, like that Chase Brown type, or that, you know, that Deuce Vaughn, where they're just like everyone hypes them up because they were great in college, and then they go in round five or six, and then they don't step on the football field. So it's,
that's the key to it all. I saw a couple mocks where he was going in the third round, and again, he gets third round draft capital. It's totally different than round five or six. It's the Zach Evans effect, right? You fall in love with a running back during this process, and they go in round five or six. It better be a damn good situation for you to still invest in that running back, you know? And like, I know we talked a lot about him last year, but Zach Evans was a guy that you loved. But then once he went, you know, as late as he did, a lot of people are still just saying, you know what though? It's the Rams. It's the ripe opportunity. But it's like in the back of your head, you got to make those corrections. You got to realize, hey, this might not be the time. So a couple guys that I have in the next tier down, and also in that tier, I have Bucky Irving, who I know you were higher on earlier on in the process. Before we move down to, like, say, the lottery tickets, he's another guy that I think could be in a committee, a solid running back, a solid contributor. But I know there were some things you loved, and then the more you dug into it, some things that you weren't totally into.
Yeah, he's just not that workhorse-style running back, right? He's a scat pack type, upside plus, like a Jerick McKinnon, Terry Cohen at best
type of running back. I see people comparing him to, like, the Devon A-chain, and you're like, whoa, pump the brakes there. That's not what we're looking at.
Not even close to the same type of athlete. Yeah. He's a good short area athlete, but like athleticism is not Bucky Irving's middle name. And he's a good receiving back. He was probably the best on paper in this class. He had 290 plus PFF rush grades, which was interesting because he was one of few with guys like Blake Corum that had more than one 90 plus rush grade or even had one. So that was interesting because he's had 1,000 yards back-to-back seasons at Oregon. Like, he's been a playmaker. He's made plays. He's ran between the tackles. He's made defenders miss. He's a scat back plus fantasy upside in the right situation. There is some, but like, he's landing spot dependent, and he's probably the most landing spot dependent outside a guy like Braylon Allen, where you want him to get that two down goal line role, that Brian Robinson, that Jamal Williams, like that Gus Edwards type bully ball at the goal line roll. Bucky Irving's in that same category, and that's why they're in that tier two for me. They're 7 and 8 right now. I think Braylon Allen and Bucky, I just don't see Bucky Irving ever being an elite fantasy asset. And people have him RB1, people have him top three. A lot of people are super high on him. So he's just a guy that good player. I if he got the draft capital, I'd be more in on him because I did love the tape and I love the numbers. But I just don't see how his skill set is going to translate to the NFL and be in a role where he's valuable like that. Cause he's not a Jahmyr Gibbs. He's not a Devon A-chain where you're undersized, but you can get away with it because of how explosive you are. And they play powerful compared to Bucky Irving does. Like, Gibbs is out there running people over, bouncing off contact. Like, Bucky Irving does not have the same contact balance or power that Jahmyr Gibbs or A-chain have. That's what separates those type of running backs.
And this is what separates things for me right now is tier one. We were debating back and forth, right? Is it Corum? Is it these guys? Or would I take a running back one upside like Pacheco or Najee Harris? When you get the 204 to 208, like the guys we just talked about, most of those running backs we just said go between 204, 208. And the equivalent in market right now lends itself to the running backs of the veteran style so much more, because you look at from 204 to 208 right now, it's Alvin Kamara, it's Tony Pollard, it's Javonte Williams, it's Joe Mixon, it's Zamir White. And it's like, man, if I got to invest in this type of, you know, running back in this area and I'm a win now team, you better believe when we get to 204, I'm going to say, hey, I'll give you this pick for Alvin Kamara. And we get to 206. Yeah, I'm going to give you the 206 for Joe Mixon or Zamir White because I'm going to get production for a year or two. You know, I think Kamara and Mixon still have enough juice for two more good years, another elite year this year, and then maybe a little bit off. But this is where, for me, I'm going in. I'm buying into some of these running backs.
Yeah, absolutely. And it comes down to that, right? Like, are you here to win your fantasy leagues or are you here to have fun in rookie drafts? That's what I have.
Hey, they are fun.
Twitter is for my rookie receipts, like having fun with evaluating prospects, saying who's good, who's bad. But me and my dynasty leagues, I'm a different type of animal. Like, I am out there hounding trades, pounding the table on these vets, like trying to win fantasy leagues. I did really well last year and the year before doing that, and I'm going to keep doing that. My strategy, I've always been a guy that trades for your established quarterbacks, build your rookie wideouts and rookie drafts, and then just take advantage of veteran values on running backs. And it's always worked for me. So just take advantage of the Joe Mixons, the Alvin Kamaras, the James Connors, the Derrick Henrys, the Austin Ecklers, because I'm sure half of those guys still have juice in them where they're going to give you a top 10 season. Kamara, James Connor, Joe Mixon, they were all RB1s in points per game last year. So don't fade those guys. Give up your late seconds and take advantage.
And this is like last year, I gave up the 201 for Alvin Kamara and a 25 second that the guy thought was going to be late. You know, it's like, this is where I call this, you know, this is, my kids love to open sports cards. So it's a matter of like opening packs. Look what you could get, right? You could get this. You could get that. You could get something big. Or I just personally go buy the guys I like, because then I already have what I want and I'm not wasting money on frivolous things. So yeah. In these situations, like, yeah, okay, you know, there is a chance that, you know, the right running back or the right guy at the 206 is going to pan out. Give me Joe Mixon. I mean, the last, since 2018, he's been RB 10, 13, injured, RB 4, 10, 6. And then you look at this change right now. He goes from the 14th best PFF line to the 8th, a team that's, you know, getting some offensive linemen back. You look at the Roz score, it went from 4.11, the lowest in the AFC for the Bengals, to the Texans, which are number 2, 8.26. I mean, talent meets opportunity. Someone the other day told me I'm absolutely crazy for paying the 207 for Joe Mixon. I think it's the other way around. Like 206, 207, I'm doing that. And that was the biggest thing. Like, people were really irritated that I was saying Joe Mixon's still worth a mid-second. Why wouldn't he be? You know, like, this is just that time of year where this is what you got to do. The last tier, and I want to talk about the running back, the rookie running back second, staying with the veterans. These are the guys that I say have flex appeal, RB2 upside, from the 209 to the 212. This is your Jalen Warren, your Aaron Jones, your Austin Ekeler, James Conner, Chuba Hubbard, Brian Robinson. Are these the kind of guys that you're willing to invest in? Because they're not long-term situations. They're not, I think Jalen Warren could be, but they're not guys that are going to be long for this league. But they're going to be guys that can give you immediate production, especially Jones, Ekeler, and James Conner.
Yeah, Jalen Warren's a guy that I really like. He's young, and he had a ridiculous amount of receptions and targets last year. It seems like the Steelers have penciled him in as like their third down scat back playmaker. Russ comes in, even more check down opportunity, better offense, more efficient. Probably going to see a little bit more Jalen Warren in the run game as well. So he's a guy there. Love James Conner. I love the value on James Conner. I mean, this is a guy that had 1,000 yards in like 11 and a half games last year. Everyone says 13, but if you look at the game log, he played less than like 30-40% of snaps in two of those. So The numbers are even better than you think. And he's been an RB1, averaging 15 plus points per game in the past three seasons on a Cardinals team that hasn't been good. Cardinals are probably going to be the better version that they've been in a little bit now next year, especially if they bring in a guy like Marvin Harrison Jr. They have another first round pick at 27. They have their second round pick. I think they have 2 second round picks. Mm-hmm. Like, they're loaded out the gills with draft capital. We're going to see James Conner in a situation that he gets more efficient, and he already was averaging 5 yards per carry last year. So I love James Conner's value.
And he might get cheaper. I mean, this is the interesting thing right now. James Conner's backup is Michael Carter. I don't think that's who they roll with. So they end up drafting a guy in round 4, 5, and 6. Now, all of a sudden, you know, Twitter's going to start being like, oh, is James Conner washed? Are we going to get these kind of situations? You know, we start to draft some of these other running backs. The guys that I want to highlight real quick are the Zamir White and the Chuba Hubbard types. Now, I think Zamir White, they've made enough of a commitment that they might not go out and dig too deep, especially after signing Alexander Mattison. But I've been having a lot of people chirp back about, is Hubbard, in your mind, considered someone that isn't someone you invest in Dynasty? I'm just basically saying, you know what? The talent isn't that great. You know, like, he's a good guy to add on your team. I would buy him for a third. I would sell him for a second. But there's a good chance that Carolina, if they don't replace him this year, they will 100% replace him next year.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the thing that matters, right, is job security. Like, we got to look at this landscape in an even smaller window. Mm-hmm. Like, we had the last year when the 23 class is coming in. I mean, David Montgomery found himself with a friend, Jahmyr Gibbs, like, Bijan Robinson, Tyler Algier came off 1,000 yards rushing as a fifth round rookie running back. Added Bijan the next year. Like,
you're not going to pass on that.
If you think you're safe, you're probably not. So if there's a guy that's a day three running back that, unless he put up 1,400 yards and was ridiculously good, And you notice too, a lot of the bad teams seem to be the ones to do it. James Robinson was great. They added Travis Etienne in round one. David Montgomery and Swift and Jamal Williams was all a great backfield there for the Lions or for the Bears. The Lions let both of those guys walk. They signed DeMont and they draft Gibbs 12. Like, if you think you're safe, you're not. I promise you, just take advantage of that. Like, give me Aaron Jones, give me Austin Eckler, give me Kamara, give me James Conner on a one-year view rental, then wasting a first-round pick on a guy like Rashad White or James Cook that you can also look at in that same type of lens.
And the landscape of running backs is going to be flipped on its head next year because you're going to get five more elite-type running backs. You're going to have Bijan. You're going to have Gibbs. You're going to have Breece. You're going to have AJ. You're going to have some of those guys that are now 23, 24, ascending even further, and you're going to have these guys added in at, just like we had in 2018 when that 2017 class became sophomores and those guys started erupting even more, and then you added, you know, Saquon Barkley, and the, like, the running back class was in its heyday. Right now we're in an area where it's like, this is running back value time.
Yeah.
This is where we get those guys that are, you know, we're going to have another influx in 25 and 26 with running backs. Now's the time to just ride the coattails of these Derrick Henrys, these Aaron Jones, these James Conners. Couple draft lottery guys I wanted to talk about. My next three I have is Ray Davis, Isaiah Davis, Isaac Garendo. I see some people putting Frank Gore Jr. pretty high, which NFL.com has him as their RB4, which blows my mind. You know, there's guys, Tyrone Tracy, they have as their RB8. I also want to really get into, there's one more running back. And we know that Matt Hicks loved Cody Schrader. They have him as their RB15. But there's some guys that fall down here where, like, Dylan Johnson's a guy that I'm starting to pay a little bit more attention to. So some of these lottery tickets, these guys that people aren't necessarily paying as much attention to, I really love Ray Davis out of that group. But who's your guy?
Yeah, I haven't watched a good amount of those guys just yet. Isaiah Davis is a guy I really like. Four straight years of 700-plus yards, back-to-back 1,500-plus yard seasons. I was looking into his profile, and 50% or more of games he had 100-plus rushing yards. True breakout year with 800-plus yards, double-digit touchdowns as a true freshman. South Dakota State, they had Pierre Strong, who was a guy that was drafted in that round 4-5 range. Isaiah Davis is a guy that was 6'1", 220, big body running back. I could see him finding himself a role at the next level. I think I really liked his game, and I think he has good patience, good vision. He can make people miss. He kind of has a good blend of everything. Ray Davis is a guy from Kentucky, had two back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons, pretty good receiving back. He has great moves. He's like that Elijah Mitchell in this class for me, right? Like, he's that 23, 24-year-old running back, fifth-year guy, good runner. He's probably going to find himself in that, like, hybrid 1B or like two role where he's backing up a really good running back, round four, round five guy. And then Jace McClellan is a guy that you didn't mention that I really liked from Bama.
Yes.
I think he's just a fundamentally sound guy. He's a Bama running back. He's young. He's a fourth year player. He had a good Senior Bowl. He can catch the ball. He's explosive. He's a guy that kind of checks the boxes a lot. He passes the eye test. So those three guys are kind of like that next 11, 12, and 13, or 10, 11, 12 for me, I think. As of today, I still have a lot. I got to watch Schrader. I got to watch Tyrone Tracy. I got to watch Guarendo. I got to watch all these guys. Frank Gore, I haven't watched him yet, but
Frank Gore's one everybody asks me about. And I think it's safe to say he'll at least be the second best Gore in the family. You know what I mean? I think that's kind of where we end up with the entire thing. I think the biggest takeaway for me is I kind of wanted some of these early third round rookie picks to take a shot on some of these guys because that. I went over 10 or 12 different landing spots right now. There are only, in my opinion, 8 to 10 RB2s that are like, you know what? That guy's got a solidified position. You know, we could see some of these other guys who are guys like Audric Estime could fall to 301 if his ideal situation isn't there where he falls somewhere where he's a backup, right? But then you draft him with that 301, and then the minute Aaron Jones goes down to injury or wherever he goes, now that guy's worth a second. I like to have those early thirds loaded up, not necessarily for guys that are my wide receiver 7, 8, and 9, but some running back depth, you know, and I think that's an area I'm not totally comfortable in that mid-second area. I kind of want to trade into some veterans with those early thirds. I might move.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it all comes down to is cost of acquisition is key at the running back position. 2025 is going to come in and it's going to come fast. So look at these guys, take advantage of the market value and how the things swing throughout the season, right? Like if you got Gus Edwards and you're riding him as a fourth, fifth running back on your team and it's week 12 and someone needs a running back, sacrifice that little bit of depth. If he has eight touchdowns and he's like top 15 running back, right? Sacrifice that, go get a 25 second. And then we'll watch him get replaced by an Ashton Jaunte or by a Ollie Gordon or by a Trevor Etienne or one of these guys, Travion Henderson, Devin Neal. I could go on and on. I could list 12 guys right now. Omarion Hampton, like class is deep. So ride these guys into the sunset, the James Conners, the Aaron Joneses, the Derrick Henrys, and then all the Pachecos, Rashad Whites, James Cooks, even Kyren Williams, like these type of guys, I am just absolutely dumping mid-season or after this season. And I'm on
going into 25.
Let's dumping him now.
Yeah. Kyren's value will never get higher, you know, and he's not going to get replaced by anyone in this class, but we saw it already with the Rams with Todd Gurley. My biggest thing is
Braylon Allen to be a Ram, right? And be that goal line guy. And then what's Kyren? What is he going to be now? Like that
back end RB1. Yeah. I think he's still being RB1. You know, and I think we all talk about, like I said, the Cowboys and the Chargers, but pay attention to these key situations, the Rams, the Colts, the Eagles, the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills. None of them have a legit RB2 in-house. You know what I mean? A lot of people say the Ravens do with Keaton Mitchell, but he's not going to be back till late November. You know, like he tore his ACL real late in the show. Chiefs don't really have anything. Eagles, I mean, those are some landing spots where, yes, this class doesn't have Jahmyr Gibbs. It doesn't have Bijan Robinson. But it's going to have some guys that are going to give you a little bit of value, going to give you some opportunity to, you know, draft a Trey Benson in an early second, and maybe he takes over, you know, maybe the Bills take him. James Cook goes down, you flip him for a first. Now next year, you got a better running back. You're into the right situation.
Keep an eye on Miami. Miami could add an Audric Esme or a Braylon Allen and have them be that two-down bruiser. Keep Achain fresh. Wouldn't be fun for our fantasy teams, but it's a possibility. So just keep your eyes open and just think like Jahmyr Gibbs already has a David Montgomery and it didn't matter. Bijan already has a Tyler Algier and it doesn't matter. But like guys like Achain, like Tank Bigsby and Etienne, like the Jags are not drafting another running back after that Tank Bigsby draft. Maybe they do in round four or five, but Kenneth Walker survived, Zach Charbonnet. Like these guys have survived it. JT survived it. Like, just keep an eye out on the Kyrens, the Achain. I think Achain's phenomenal. I think he's a top six, top seven dynasty running back. But I'm saying for market value purposes, if they draft a Braylon Allen or if they draft an Estime, I think he'll still be amazing. But I think people will panic and then his value is going to drop. And then there's a buy window, right? But maybe you could get ahead of that curve right now and maybe buy post-draft because no one's expecting a draft position where Kyren or Achain get a goal line bully there with them. But
Alex Clark asked, should he trade away Kenneth Walker for 25 draft capital? Before we end the show, there are six running backs that I would not trade right now for that unless I knew where they're at. I mean, obviously Bijan, Gibbs, Breece Hall, Achain, Jonathan Taylor, and Travis Etienne. Anyone else, including Saquon Barkley, including, you know, some of these other guys that we consider even a Rashad White, I am selling for a 25 first plus a running back. So, I mean, if someone comes to me today and they offer me a 25 first that's random to mid, plus I can get, you know, a running back that's going to put up points for Saquon Barkley, I would do that, you know, like because we're getting to the age where their values are going to start to dip. So that's always good process. It's good way to get insulated. So
I like Kenneth Walker. Before we cut it out, I think I like Kenneth Walker just because we've already seen Charbonnet there. They're getting a new coach. Yeah. We're like yet to see his ceiling, and I'm excited to see it when we do because he's just such an explosive runner. And if he can catch more passes, he can hit a crazy ceiling. But I mean, yeah, if I'm getting a 25 first and Kamara, Joe Mixon, or Derrick Henry, take it.
I don't know if we get to see Kenneth Walker's true elite ceiling after the Zach Charbonnet injury. We could see him bounce all the way up to RB6, RB7 overall in Dynasty if we got into those situations. So thanks again for tuning in, guys, and enjoy the process. Boom. Had to get that.